The hour of 8:30 having arrived, I'm going to call to order State and Local Government Operations Reform, Technology, and Elections. The first bill on the agenda is House File 2907. Representative Johnson. Quorum. Representative Johnson, we don't have a quorum yet, but Representative Johnson, I'm going to move that House File 2907 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. Is that the appropriate motion? It doesn't have to go anywhere else, does it?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
All right. We can't take action on it, but you could describe your bill. And I see there's an amendment also. I'm going to move the A5 amendment. Why don't you tell us what the amendment does while we're waiting for a quorum?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Chair members. What the amendment does, it just makes clear that, and simply that members on the task force that's being directed in the bill will serve without compensation at the pleasure of the Commissioner of Commerce.
All right, is there any controversy over that, or why was that needed?
No, there's no controversy over that, but just wanted to make it perfectly clear that that was the case, that there would be no fiscal note.
All right. Why don't you describe your bill, and then we'll put the amendment on once we have a quorum.
Certainly, Mr. Chair. Just as a way of background, this in 2008, a law was passed that formed the Ultra High Speed Broadband Task Force, and this is a task force now that has met over the last 2 years to outline a path to high speed internet and access for all residents by 2015. And this 23-member task force consisted of a variety of stakeholders in telecommunications. They had a lot of meetings and met with the public and so forth, and the work culminated in the Minnesota Ultra High Speed Broadband Report. And this report laid out and set out goals and proposed actions regarding broadband. And this particular bill that we have before us is based on the work of this task force and the recommended goals and actions. The item that I think is most pertinent to this particular committee, Mr. Chair, would be subdivision 4 of this particular bill, which speaks to the advisory group. And that is a group that the Commissioner of Commerce would appoint and convene, consisting of 15 members, meet at the call of the chair. And essentially, this group would advise regarding strategies to achieve the goals of universal access and high speed throughout the state. So that, Mr. Chair and members, is long and short of it.
All right. Discussion to the bill. We still don't have a quorum, but discussion to the bill members. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, couldn't the commissioner just do this without us having to actually write it into law?
Representative Johnson.
I didn't hear the question, Mr. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, couldn't the Commissioner of Commerce just do this without writing it into law?
Well, I think what it does, it gives some formality to something that has been a very successful process to date. The broadband task force, which was put together in the last bill, has achieved unusual success in terms of putting together an excellent report and recommendation. I think people were surprised at how well it worked, and this would provide as a continuation of that.
Mr. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative, I'll reiterate and ask the question again. Could the commissioner do this without writing it into law, especially with your testimony that the previous experience was so good? Would the commissioner not want to do this? I'll ask again. Could the commissioner do this without us writing it into law?
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Biskins. I don't know for sure if they're good or not, but I think what this does is provide, again, the formality of setting aside a task force that can work specifically on this, meet regularly, and given the importance of broadband throughout the state of Minnesota and internet access, we need this kind of push to move forward to make Minnesota one of the forerunners in the state on this. So this provides that extra emphasis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. We're getting into political speak now. The simple answer is yes, of course the commissioner could do it. Representative, I do believe that the commissioner of commerce, the current commissioner, and any future commissioner of commerce would understand the importance of broadband and internet access and would put that on a high priority as well. I don't believe, Mr. Chair and members of this committee, that we need to be creating more government advisory groups and task forces, especially on issues which are clearly of such high importance.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would note that the Commissioner of Commerce does support this bill, and you never know for sure whether commissioners in the future would be as inclined, and I think this really gives some very specific direction as to the importance of broadband throughout the state.
Further discussion. Representative Johnson, we have a quorum. I'm going to move the A5 amendment, and you've already explained it. Any discussion to the A5 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. So, Representative Johnson, the bill is in the order that you wish to have it. Any further testimony or discussion? Seeing none, then I'll renew my motion that House File 2907 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Members, the next bill on the agenda is House File 3096, and that bill has a significant delete everything amendment. I'm going to move that House File 3096 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. Then I want to move the DE1 amendment, and I want the committee to put that amendment on. Then we're going to have discussion to the bill as amended, and I'm going to lay it over for one day so that anyone who may want to look at the bill as amended, since it is significant, will have the time to do it. So I'm going to move the DE1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. And then if we could have the testifiers come up quickly and explain the bill as amended. And there's been some work within the department and within a number of groups on this bill. So welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and then to the bill as amended.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Tom Johnson with the Gray Plant Moody firm, and our firm represents an organization called MACRO, which is the umbrella organization for the extended employment providers. These are organizations like Opportunity Partners, Goodwill Easter Seal, Accessibility ProAct. I thought that we're going to take testimony yesterday. Otherwise, there would be providers here in my place. But I will gladly run.
Well, we can put this off until tomorrow. I had hoped we would get any pertinent testimony out of the way today, and then if anyone had a issue tomorrow, but that's okay.
I'm glad to do that.
All right,
I'm prepared. I'm glad to do that. I just said that by way of explaining why I'm here rather than
that's fine.
Providers. Broadly speaking, committee members, this bill does three things. First, it in subdivision one expands the services that are now covered under state law that require a certain percentage, 19%, of the state agency's janitorial service contracts to be awarded to organizations that serve the severely disabled. Now, the expansion occurs in two ways. One is that it expands the services covered to digital imaging services and to various mailing services. And it also expands the providers that are covered under this commitment by the state to day training and rehabilitation service providers. That subdivision also clarifies after considerable discussion with the Department of Administration, what triggers this 19% requirement, and that's the last language in the subdivision. So that's subdivision one, Your Honor.
Okay. And
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Rhodes, Representative Rhodes, welcome back. to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman, members of the committee. Mr. Johnson and I did work together, although he never referred to me as Your Honor, like he did to you, but obviously that rank has its privileges. We did have considerable discussion on this, and if the only for everybody to know is the language that was drafted actually by Senate counsel is a little bit different than the language we agreed on. I think it's perhaps simpler, and Mr. Allen is actually looking at it right now. But as long as you're going to lay it over, that would be fine. We'll just make double sure. But if it's the way we conceptualized it and the way we agreed to do it, this is the way legislation should be done. We all sat down for a few hours, actually, and worked it out. And he's been a gentleman all the way through. And we think it'll be good for the people that are going to be able to be serviced.
Representative Rhodes, it was good to work with you again. We worked when you were in the House on a number of pieces of legislation in a similar way, and those turned out to be some very effective laws. So thank you again.
Chairman, members.
Members, if there's no more discussion to the amendment, and since we may have, I hope, not a significant amendment tomorrow, but we'll have time to let this incubate one more time and get it right, we'll bring it up tomorrow. And then if we could have a very narrowly focused testimony tomorrow, because we have a full agenda, that would be helpful. So thank you both. I'm going to lay over House File 3096, and we'll proceed to the next bill. Thank you both.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Dill, I believe we have a division report. So Representative Nelson.
I'd like to move the division report.
Representative Nelson moves the division report. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Representative Dill, House File 2954. I believe I'm going to move it goes to the General Register. So I'll make that motion for you.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. In looking at the bill, after I visited with your administrator, I'm wondering if I'm looking at page 6, if this won't need to go to Environment Finance for a quick, brief look. I don't think the chair has a problem with it, but it does. She's very familiar with the bill. She's heard it twice in other committees, but because it has to do with money and how appraisals are done and how sales are made, I'm thinking that maybe Environment Finance, although I'd love to have it go to the General Register and skip that step. But
all right.
I don't know how that should be handled, frankly.
Representative Dill, here's what I'll do. I'll withdraw my motion, and then I'll make a motion that House File 2954 be recommended to pass and be referred to Finance, and then it will be referred down to Environment Finance. It has to go, as Representative Carlson always says, it has to go in as it comes out. I'm learning more and more about what that means.
Thank you, sir. All right. I assume that you are interested, this committee is interested in the local unit of government provisions, which are primarily in Section 1. It has to do with burning permits and how burning permits are effectuated out in counties. There's about 20 to 25 counties whose forested lands are less than 3%, and those are primarily in the southwest and along the western border of Minnesota up to about Lac La Parle County and maybe a little above that. And then down about halfway over to Fairmont if you were following the southern Iowa border. In those counties, wildfire risk is considered to be extremely low, very manageable. And what the department is suggesting is that the counties that are interested in participating come in with a general burning plan that will be worked out, the conditions of which would be worked out between the Department of Natural Resources and the county. And then at that point, the county then would handle the issuance of burning permits, which could include simply a general burning permit of which people are allowed to burn without calling in, without registering their site, et cetera, et cetera. And this is actually the department has reduced their staffing, and it will eventually get down to no staffing down in that non-forested region as a part of budget cut implementations and proper management of our state forests. And frankly, it's troublesome in a lot of cases to have the folks that are out doing ag burning and things like that calling in and taking up time of counties and sheriff's offices and everything like that. So this is something the department's been working on, and I'd be stand for any questions.
All right. Any questions? Seeing no questions. Do you have anyone that needs to testify in this, Representative Dill?
No.
Seeing none, then I'll renew my motion that House File 2954 be recommended to pass and be referred to Finance, and then they'll make the recommendation down to Environment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dill.
Do you want to, Simon's not here.
Okay, Representative Nelson, let's go to House File 3065, and you move the division report.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the division report on 3065.
All right, any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails. Representative Nelson, do you want to handle 3065?
I'll attempt to, but yes. 3065, there was not a lot of controversy around if there's any controversy in the committee. Basically, what it does is takes out the principal executive office and just puts an office located in for banking and security institutions. The issue here is that currently there is only one bank that qualifies as having principal office and executive office in Minnesota, and it limits, severely limits local governments with the ability where they can put their money. The other piece has to do with securities and the safekeeping of securities, and that makes it comply with actual practice that's going on. A lot of the local governments weren't aware of this provision, and this actually, and there aren't any that are located here that can do this, so that they're currently, most of them are out of compliance with this. So this strict kind of cleans up the law and makes it easier for local governments to take care of their banking and their security issues.
Any discussion? Seeing none, Representative Nelson, you want to move that House File 3065 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register?
So I've moved that 3065 be recommended to pass and move to the general register.
All right. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails. Is Representative Dabney here? I thought I saw him, but all right. We're going to jump to the bottom with Representative Poppy's bill, and we'll move from Representative Dabney. Very good timing. Otherwise, we were going to jump over you.
Mr. Chair, the pages were excellent. They came and found me, and I wasn't even quite in the place I told them I would be. So I'm appreciative.
Mr. Representative Nelson.
I'll move the committee report for House File 3292.
Representative Nelson moves the division report. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Representative Dabney, House File 3292, I'll move that it be recommended to pass and be sent to the general register.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
To your bill.
All right. Good morning, members. It's good to be back before the committee. House file.
Sam Dabney, you might want to hold on that.
you're right. If I could set that aside, I'll get back to you whether it's good to be back before the committee or not. This House File 3292 allows Hennepin County to construct a wind turbine in the western part of the county, produce and then sell the subsequent wind power. They've already received permission from the city of Medina, which is where this entity would be located. And this sort of approach is supportive of the state's seabed policy that this legislature has passed. The request here is similar to permission that has already been granted to the city of Mountain Irons, EDA, and the county of Winona, and actually all school districts in the state have the permission to enter into this sort of a corporate structure and develop alternative energy. The pages are passing out a letter from Commissioner McLaughlin, who is both chair of the Intergovernmental Relations Committee for the Hennepin County, but also chairs the Public Works, Energy, and Environment Committee, which is moving forward with this proposal. With me today is Mr. Carl Michaud, who's the director of Hennepin County's Department of Environmental Services and can speak to the particulars of the proposal.
All right. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representatives, my name is Carl Michaud. I'm director of Environmental Services for Hennepin County. And this legislation would be very beneficial to us because it would be able to enable the county to take advantage of some of the federal incentives for developing renewable energy. And specifically, as Representative Dabney has mentioned, it's to develop a wind turbine in the city of Medina, a wind turbine on our public works facility out there. We have many years ago, we, for about 2 years, we measured the wind resource out there at the Public Works facility. We had used to work with the Minnesota Department of Commerce to actually put some of the wind measuring equipment on the sheriff's radio tower out there. And over the 2 years, we measured the wind, and we would determine that the wind resource out there was adequate or sufficient to build a wind turbine. We had also engaged a private consultant who had done a lot of the measuring and evaluating the wind resource out at Buffalo Ridge for a number of private developers. And we asked them to take a look at that same data and also bring in some of their own information. And they concluded the same thing, that the wind resource was adequate out there to construct a turbine. So based on that, we had approached the city of Medina to see what kind of issues and concerns they might have about us, the county, putting a wind turbine out there. And over a period of about a year and a half, we worked through many of the issues and concerns they had about the aesthetics and potential noise and all the other issues associated with developing a turbine. So we, the city council gave us approval. And now the last step here is to get some of this legislation so that we could seek some of the federal incentives here, which will make contribute to making this project more economically feasible.
Questions? Representative Emmer.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Mashad, will you just tell us a little bit more detail when you say making some of the resources available? What resources are you talking about? Is this stimulus money? You said incentives. What are the incentives specifically? How much is this going to cost?
Mr. Mashad.
Mr. Chairman, Representative. Roughly, the wind turbine itself will be in that $3.2 to $3.5 million. There's a number of incentives out there. There's the production tax credit, there's the investment tax credit, and there's also some outright grants that are available up front, up to 30% of the cost of the turbine. So roughly, it's almost $1 million in grants.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Mashad. So what you're hoping to do is build it for somewhere between $1 and $2 million, somewhere in there, $2.5 million?
Mr. Mashad.
That's correct.
In November. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mashad, who's going to be responsible for the $1 to $2.5 million cost of the project?
Mr. Mashad.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the county will be responsible for the remainder of the cost for building and operating and maintaining the wind turbine.
Mr. Chair.
November.
Mr. Mashad, does that mean when you say the county, because it really is been sticking under my craw lately in my craw. I see buses now that say a service of the Metropolitan Council. I think that should be changed to say a service provided by the Minnesota taxpayer, the Hennepin County taxpayer. When you say the county, are you saying that the Hennepin County taxpayers will be ultimately responsible then for a $1 to $2.5 million expense on this proposed wind turbine?
Mr. Mashad.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that is correct.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Emmer.
Mr. Mashad, what do you anticipate that in terms of power, and give me whatever measurement that you'd use, that this wind turbine is projected to produce over the first, say, 1 to 3 years, and what is the cost going to be, if you would, perhaps at a per kilowatt?
Mr. Mashad.
Mr. Chairman, Representative. The county currently uses roughly 55 million kilowatt hours a year. This turbine would produce roughly 4 million kilowatt hours a year. The county currently spends almost $7 million a year in purchasing electricity from a variety of providers. So this turbine would generate roughly 5% of the county's needs.
Representative Emmer?
Mr. Chair, in I've got some other questions, Mr. Mashad, but can you explain to me, if we're just talking about wind, why is this being expanded to, it appears, solar as well?
Mr. Mashad.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that's the way the legislation was written. Our interest is primarily in the wind turbine. If I guess I'll leave it to the pleasure of the committee here whether you want to restrict it or limit it further.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Emmer.
And thank you, Mr. Mashad, but I if you're up here on behalf of Hennepin County testifying in support of what you want to do, putting up another one of these wind turbines at taxpayer expense, I'm interested to know why it's at the pleasure of the committee you're the one, Hennepin County's the one, Representative Dabney, asking for this. Why solar?
Mr. Machado or Representative Dabney?
Just so that the, Mr. Chair, Representative Amber, so you're aware, there is a solar array on the Public Works facility in the Hennepin County Public Works facility in Medina already, and it's that's been there for a couple of years now?
A couple of years.
So there is already a solar array on this facility at this time.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, I'm well aware of that, and I'm well aware of the cost that was incurred to put that up, and that it will take many, many years before it even breaks even under certain numbers. My question is, then, is are you putting in the solar part of it because you expect to be selling excess power generated off the those wonderful solar panels as well?
Mr. Machado.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, ideally in the future, you know, when we when the county constructs or remodels our other buildings that we own and operate, we do review under the Minnesota B3 program, which looks at building sustainable buildings. We do look at opportunities to install or construct other energy conservation and other energy efficiency measures in those buildings. And one of those would be the, you know, opportunity to install some additional solar panels or solar thermal. And that's one of the reasons why we included this in the legislation.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Machado. Thanks, Representative Dabney. Certainly we have a disagreement about this. You have some great power companies right around there, including Wright Hennepin and others. And if this were as viable as you would like to believe it is, certainly they would already be doing it at a level that you could access. I find it interesting when we see these things being proposed by government entities using terms like, you know, sustainable building, etc. It adds huge cost and it doesn't have the return. And I'd love to see what analysis you've done that's going to show us that all the money you're going to invest on this wind turbine, much like all the money that was invested on those wonderful solar panels, is actually going to have a cost benefit that makes sense as opposed to what we've been seeing. And I have major concerns, but thank you for your patience in answering the questions.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I have a different set of questions, and that is why the need to form an LLC or a corporation in order to do this. Can you explain a little bit more kind of what the nature of the public-private arrangement is? And this is a presumably a for-profit entity. And I know that there are restrictions on the amount of energy that can be sold through one of these. But what is the primary purpose? Is it to generate energy for the county's needs, or is it to enter into a for-profit kind of arrangement?
Mr. Machado.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Winkler, the purpose of the legislation is to be able to form or be a participant, a limited partner in a partnership, form a limited liability company, or be a shareholder. And the reason for doing that is that currently government entities, as they exist today, are not eligible for these federal incentives. Allowing us to form one of these or participate in one of these limited liability companies or corporation would make the county eligible, and then we could receive the federal tax incentives.
Mr. Chair, then it's so that I guess the in the purpose is to generate electricity for the county's usage. Is that the idea,
Mr. Machado?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Winkler, that is the purpose.
So,
Representative Winkler,
Mr. Chair, then it sounds like what you're trying to do is take advantage of a federal funding program that is available for corporations, etc. And as long as the county is participating through one of these entities, the county can make use of those federal dollars for the purpose of generating electricity through a wind turbine for the county's needs.
Mr. Machado?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Winkler, that is essentially correct.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Dabney, I guess I have some comments on Representative Emmer's comments. You know, you're surprised that the cost goes to the Hennepin County taxpayers. Taxpayers happen to be the major support of government. There isn't any set of Hennepin County tooth fairies or Hennepin County bank robbers or anything like that. And I guess I do have one question. Is this $1 million plus that Representative Emmer is so concerned about, what proportion of that is that of the Hennepin County budget?
Mr. Machado, do you know the answer to that one?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, I know the county budget's over $1 million or $1 billion. So,
okay.
What is it?
So we're looking at
I can't
point,
do the math
what,
in my head.
So we're looking at something,
Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, we're looking at something at 0.1%. Okay, thank you. Just wanted to get the numerical parameters.
I warned you, Representative Danby, about what you'd said earlier.
You know, yesterday it was geometry, and today it's different forms of percentages yeah. with Representative Kahn.
Yes. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think my concern here is the liability issue. The county is going to be on the hook, even for the private company. I mean, it clearly states here that either of which and liability exempting them, I mean, it seems as though there's a risk here involved in doing this, but the liability all rests with Hennepin County, not on this company. Can you please address the liability
issue? Mr. Michon, you want?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kiffmeyer, from what I understand from our legal counsel, there's really no change in the liability statute or responsibilities for the county. They remain the same.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Well yes, that is certainly true for that, but it also says here that it governs liability for this limited liability company or a corporation, either of which, and formed under this section. When I look at this, it seems to not cover not only Hennepin County, it covers all of those that are in that partnership or in that LLC.
Mr. Machado.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kiffmeyer, I'm going to have our legal counsel comment here.
Right.
Excuse me.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, I'm Chuck Salter with the Hennepin County Attorney's Office. Mr. Chair, Representative, I would point you to that last sentence, and the last clause of the sentence reads, which is wholly owned by Hennepin County. So the intent of that phrase was to limit this liability clause to only those situations where there's an LLC or a corporation which is wholly owned by Hennepin County. If Hennepin County were to partner with another entity, then this would not apply. And the intent of this clause is to ensure that Hennepin County would be treated in this corporation or LLC in the same manner it would be under Chapter 466 with those appropriate liability limitations.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Well, it's still, nonetheless, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Salter, when you are a part owner, how do you separate out that which is going to be the liability of just Hennepin County and the other liability? I mean, they're in this thing together, and you would say wholly owned. And so I still am not clear that this liability issue is going to work.
Mr. Salt.
If there is a partnership, then that clause would not apply. Then we would not be treated under 466. So that would be a risk that Hennepin County would have to take. This would only apply if it is a limited liability company or a corporation which is 100% Hennepin County. If we partner with somebody else, then liability this clause would not apply.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just think I have, you know, after having gone through the economy and the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and some of these public-private links, links that you have, I just have a real concern about that. Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. A question here about some of the tax credits and breaks you're assuming. I've worked with a couple of wind farms trying to do these things, seabed type things, and to fully qualify for the federal tax credits, you have to have passive income. Will this entity have that to fully utilize the tax credits on the federal level?
Mr. Machado.
Mr. Chairman, Representative I think the primary goal here is we'll have to evaluate whether we would be eligible for some of those past tax credits. Our primary interest here is to be able to get some of that the federal the grant, upfront grant money for the project.
Representative Anderson.
So you're totally not sure as to how much federal credits you will be allowed to get or available to get?
Mr. Machado.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, you know, the county board has not yet made a decision on what approach they want to take here as far as, you know, what is the entity that's going to be developing the project. You know, they have not made the decision yet whether it's going to be the limited liability partner or the corporation or a shareholder in the corporation. That's something we'll need to figure out here as we move forward.
Representative Merle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, actually, my question is for Ms. Dyson about the bill summary, and I'm looking at the middle long paragraph, the final sentence, starting, if a county enters into a multi-year agreement. And my question is, from what you've heard so far, Ms. Dyson, does this sentence apply to the arrangement that Hennepin County is proposing?
Ms. Dyson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Morrow, the summary there, it's talking about the Chapter 373.48, which is what is referenced in the first sentence of the bill, where it says to exercise the authority granted to the counties under that section. And that's why it's included here. And this is my understanding of what that section of law does, so I believe it would apply.
Okay. Mr. Chair, if I might.
Representative Morrow.
Then either to Mr. Machado or to Representative Dabney, the last sentence here refers to a multi-year agreement. County may finance the estimated cost by issuing revenue bonds. Mr. Machado, Representative Dabney, does that describe the project that you all are proposing here?
Mr. Machado.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that is one of the options that we have. We, again, have not decided whether we were going to issue the revenue bonds.
If I may follow. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Machado, then if you did follow that option, am I right in understanding that the debt service and all the bonds issued cannot exceed the project revenues?
Mr. Machado.
That is what the summary says. Yeah. That, Mr. Chair, President Morrow, plain English, that's what the summary indicates, that there are limitations there below the purchase price. Yes.
Thank you. Okay. Any further discussion? All right. Anyone else that needs to testify? Seeing none. Then I'll renew my motion that House File 3292 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you,
Mr. Chair and members.
I think I saw Representative Ryan. There he is.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
I'd like to move the committee report on House File 2786.
Representative Nelson moves the division report. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails. Representative Reinhart, I'm going to move that House File 2786 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
All right, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, committee members, this is a bill that would allow the Spirit Mountain Recreation Authority to expand its board from 7 members to 9. Since it's an authority that does take state action to allow that to happen. The Spirit Mountain Recreation Area 2 years ago passed a new master plan, and that master plan takes it from a one-season to a four-season area. And in doing so, the board would like to expand and add 2 more members to help with the activities that are taking place at Spirit Mountain. It's an all-volunteer board. There are no per diem costs. The board is appointed by the mayor and approved by the city council, and I'd be happy to take questions.
Any questions? Do you have anyone that needs to testify?
No, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Seeing no questions, no discussion, no testifiers, I'll renew my motion that House File 2786 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative. Representative Gardner, I thought I saw him.
Mr. Chair.
There he is. Representative Nelson.
I'd like to move the division report for House File 2949.
Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Representative Gardner, House File 2949, I will move be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. All right, Representative Gardner, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I believe you have the first committee engrossment before you that was adopted in Representative Nelson's subcommittee. Members, this bill relates to the Metropolitan Council and their wastewater treatment system. As you probably know, this is all funded by user fees. Because of the slowdown in growth in the outskirts of the metro area, the sewer availability charge, or SAC charge, is not bringing enough revenue to fully support the reserve capacity reserve fund. And so we're looking for some flexibility to allow for all of the fees that are paid into the system to really cover the cost of those reserve funds. And I have Mr. Willett here who can explain further, but I'll take your lead, Mr. Chair, to see if how much detail you'd like.
All right. Any questions? Seeing no questions, any further discussion? Do you need to have anyone testify, Representative Gardner?
Mr. Chair, the only other folks that I could think of might be from Metro Cities, but Metro Cities and Met Council have achieved an understanding with the amendment so that it meets the needs of both the developed and undeveloped parts of the metro area.
All right. Representative Emmer.
Yeah, thanks. Representative Gardner, or to the to his witness, explain for me a little bit, the Met Council, when you talk about developed and undeveloped areas, what do you mean by that? And how is it going to affect it?
Representative Gardner, you want to answer that question or have a witness?
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, I can just make one quick comment, and then I can turn it over to Mr. Willett. Actually, the under this proposal, the developed areas, areas like mine, would probably shoulder a slightly larger burden in the short term so that we don't increase the sewer availability charge on new development on the outskirts of the metro area so high that it kills development. But I'll let Mr. Willett describe that in more detail, or maybe that's what you're looking for, Representative.
Before you do, Mr. Sure. Chair, and Representative Gardner, what do you mean by probably? I mean, I'm a little concerned when we give this type of authority when you say areas like yours would probably shoulder a greater amount of the burden. How do we know that that will happen, and how do we know this won't have the adverse effect on what is already a struggling industry, construction in our area?
Why don't we let the testifier respond? Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representatives. I'm Jason Willett. I'm the Finance Director for MCES. That's the wastewater portion of the Metropolitan Council. We are the largest wastewater utility in the state. The definitions of developing and developed are actually done by a different division, the Community Development Division, that does comprehensive plans, works with the city, so I'm not really intimately familiar with that. But as to the question about whether or not there would be a shift, I think it's safe to say that regardless of the definition, what's happened here is we really have a drop-off about 70% in the fees that we normally get from SAC. Without this bill, the only authority that we have is to jack that rate up a lot, perhaps as much as 100%, which would further constrain growth or push it out of the sewered area entirely. No one really wants that. So what we've asked for here is temporarily the authority to shift between two of our fees. There's no state money, there's no property tax involved. So the cities that are not growing and haven't even in good times quite as much would temporarily pay more. Actually, all the current users, everybody that's sewered, would temporarily pay more. And part of the compromise with Metro Cities was that when development returns, that we would shift that back so that that equity, we try to settle our fees on a cost of service basis, that equity would be returned. But right now, we simply can't make the transfer that's prescribed in the state statute because we don't have the development we have. And our only alternative is to jack the rate way up, which would further exacerbate the situation.
Representative Emmer.
Thank you. Well, I don't understand it very well, sir, so if you could just explain to me where does the current rate get paid from, and who, when you say we'd have to jack it up by 100%, who'd be paying that, and why are we doing this so that apparently they don't have to shoulder all of that burden?
Mr. Willett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer. If I may, do you have the slides? We'll just look at them shortly here. I think that may help a little bit. In the first slide there, the MCS revenue sources, you can see that 100% of our wastewater costs are paid for by existing fees. And this wouldn't be a new fee, but what's listed there is municipal wastewater charge, is the fee we charge to the 105 cities that are directly connected proportionate to their flow. That's what the current users pay. The SAC fee is the one that has been paid by development, and the transfer of money from SAC to pay for current operating costs is prescribed in the state statute. So what happens is if development can't, and it has suffered a lot in the next few years, if it can't make that share, really all we've got left is to charge the municipal wastewater charge more. And that is the way the statute automatically works, that, you know, what SAC pays is subtracted from what we have to charge the cities. So by holding the SAC rates down, the development fees down, the municipal wastewater charge will have to go up. So all 105 cities will pay a little more during this temporary period. We hope that the economy will turn around quickly and we won't need very much. And whenever it does, eventually we'll shift that back to restore that equity. But there are fees related to both these. Both of them are what I would call a wholesale fee, in that we charge them to cities. We have all the treatment plants in the metropolitan area and the big pipes that go between cities. Cities have thousands of miles of pipes that go down your city streets and stuff, but they have to pay, and your retail rates that you pay your city are 50-70% of that goes to us for the actual conveyance between cities and the treatment at the treatment plants. We have to meet 1,000 regulations a year, mostly from the PCA and so forth. But what we're talking about is shifting from SAC that simply can't pay it, and I think we might have to raise the rate even as much as 100%, and then you really are talking about impacting further development or pushing it out of the Seward area to the current users temporarily. Both of those, again, wholesale fees to the city. Am I answering your question?
Thank you. A little bit. It's going to take me a little while to catch up with you, but I'm looking at this first slide that you referred me to, and we're going to take the 14% SAC share, and we're going to throw it in with the 79% MWC in effect. Or maybe I misunderstand.
Mr. Willett.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmers. Unless development goes to zero, we won't shift the whole thing. And we do have a little bit left in our reserve, but theoretically that is sort of the worst case, that if we had no development at all, we would have to charge the current users. And this is a problem being experienced all around the country, and even by some metro cities that have built water treatment plants, drinking water plants, and so forth. If I could ask you to just flip over a couple charts, you can see on the SAC units collected. This program has been working since 1973, and the last 2 years are the lowest ever. We received in 2009 6,675 units. The long-term average is about 20,000 for the entire metropolitan area. So, you know, we're like 13,000 off the normal average, but it's not zero. So we certainly would want SAC to pay as much as it reasonably could without choking off the recovery or the development we hope will occur.
Representative Emmer.
Why, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess what I'm having a difficult time understanding is you talk about having to jack up the wastewater charges. You're going to have to do that anyway. And what difference does it matter if you leave the sewer availability charge or access charge, whatever you call it, separate and go ahead and raise the municipal wastewater charge? I mean, what's the difference? Why are we absorbing the one when you can already take action that it sounds like you're going to be doing the same thing to the 105 cities regardless? Is there somebody new that's being brought into this mix that is going to be asked to pay for this?
Mr. Willett.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, no. We're going to have to ask temporarily the current users to pay for this. Unfortunately, it's probably true both fees will have to go up still. We're trying to restrain our costs as best we can. I'm not sure if you're aware that over the last decade, our number of employees in this division has gone from like 1,200 down to 650. We're trying real hard to restrain the cost, and we have been fairly successful. But if we don't have development, this hole, if you will, the 13,000 that I mentioned of units that we're not getting, at about $2,000 each, is $26 million a year. So a substantial portion of that will have to be paid by the current users, unless you want to jack our fee way up or get property taxes or money from somewhere else. We simply don't have any other options. The statute requires that we transfer money from this development, this reserve capacity fund, to pay for part of the current costs, and we won't have the money to do that.
Mr. Chair, last one, Mr. Willett. And this is probably outside of your expertise, but has there been some discussion when you say there's no other way? You're right, under the current system, the way it's formed, it appears there's no other way. Has there been any discussion within the Metropolitan Council about starting to redesign this and give it more local authority? You've got plenty of cities that are all across the state that manage their own wastewater. It seems that this system has grown to be so large, it's literally falling in on top of itself. Has there been any discussion about an actual redesign of the entire system?
Representative Willett.
The management of it.
Mr. Willett, I'm sorry. Mr. Willett.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, thank you for asking. There are a number of things that are completely under local control. Both of these fees the cities may add on to cover their own costs. But we have found, and I think most of the cities, if not all of them, would support us that there's a clear economy of scale here. This is run by the government, the regional government, because it's more efficient. Our rates are quite good. I could flip you over to, I think it's slide 10. We are among the lowest metropolitan rates in the country. We're the fifth lowest. That's not likely to change. We're also quite a bit lower than the greater Minnesota cities that are constantly in need of additional funding from the Public Facilities Authority. You're saving a lot of money by doing this regionally. There also are two slides here. I won't take your time, but this utility has gotten numerous awards from the PCA and nationally. We now have 36 months in a row with no discharge violation. That's unprecedented. You will not likely find that in those smaller cities. It is running well, and it is a bargain for you. But as much as we can, as Chairman Bell from the Metropolitan Council would say, we're always trying to balance sort of what's regionally efficient with as much local control as possible.
Well, and Mr. Chair, Mr. Willett, I'll take that as a no, then, that there hasn't been any discussion about trying to reformat it. You can give me all the good news you want, but I've had some experience with it where your folks decide who gets to develop and when they get to develop and how they can access the system when you start getting to smaller towns on the edges of Hennepin County, for instance, the western edge. I'm sure you're doing a great job under the system that's been given to you, and I don't mean to suggest otherwise. I was just asking, in light of the times that we're in, has there been any movement towards looking at a different model?
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a clarifying question for Mr. Willett. We had a project in Michael Foods in North Branch that was looking at North Branch. We actually put quite a nice package together multiple times, and ultimately they stayed in the Met Council territory because of SAC credits, not the charges themselves, but the credits that were able to be transferred. This would not affect the transfer of SAC credits, merely the charge on debt service. Is that correct?
Mr. Willett?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin, yes, that's correct.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd love to be able to offer an amendment that would stop that transfer of SAC credits that harms development in our communities, but I'm not going to offer it today. I will vote yes, but hope that we can continue that conversation about having a more level playing field.
Representative Kalin, you are not suggesting you're going to offer it on the floor, are you?
No, Mr. Chair.
I'm just clarifying it, too, because otherwise we'd keep the bill here if you wish some time to offer that amendment so that we'd have public testimony on it rather than just offering it on the floor.
Not in this bill, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative Kalin. Mm-hmm. Any further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, I'll renew my motion that House File 2949 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, move the division file, or division report on House File 3147.
Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Representative Coolidge, yes, there she is. Representative Kulichek, and I will move that House File 3147 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. So, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, committee members. This bill comes before us because of a very literal look at language that the legislature adopted in 1993 at the behest of the Department of Revenue, which was intended to prohibit county assessors, who also hold an appraiser's license, from moonlighting in their local jurisdiction. And the 1993 language also permitted assessors to perform their work in their home jurisdiction without an appraiser's license. Because it was recently interpreted by an appellate court to prohibit county assessors from doing reports and testifying at property tax appeals, I bring this bill before you today to rectify that. All interested parties have done a great deal of work in working it out. The tax section of the Bar Association, the county attorneys, and the Department of Revenue. I do have Beth Cadoon here from the Department of Revenue to answer any questions.
All right. Does your testifier wish to testify or just respond to questions?
Just respond to any questions.
All right. Any questions? Seeing no questions, no discussion, I'll renew my motion that House File 3147 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the committee or the division report on House File 3335.
Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm carrying this bill for on behalf of Maurer County.
Which, Representative Poppy, why don't you move the bill?
Yes, I would like to move the bill. On House File 3335, I'd like to move it to the General Register.
All right. Representative Poppy, to your bill.
Thank you. I am carrying this bill on behalf of Maurer County, with Austin being the county seat. The request is not unique, as 27 other counties in the state have made a point of at least one of their county offices. However, it is time sensitive, as the county recorder in Maurer County is scheduled to retire in the near future, and the county would like the ability to make this position a point of, to allow them to hire someone who has the knowledge, skills, and abilities to adequately do the job. The Maurer County Recorder's Office is a small one with 2.5 employees, and with anticipated budget adjustments, it's unclear how many current staff may be altered or may be changed. They would like some guarantee that the person that they hire would be capable of doing this job. I'm aware that there would be opposition in the fact that people are concerned about taking away voters' rights, but I would like for your support, as it's been granted in the past. Thank you.
Discussion. Representative Biscuit.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of this committee. We currently have a process in law which allows counties to go in this direction. The difference is that the process in law asks for voter approval to make this change. The bill before us says the county can make the change and puts in a reverse referendum. I think it's time we just let the law stand as it is, so I'll be voting no.
Any further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, Representative Poppy, you want to renew
I would like to renew my motion that this bill be passed and moved to the General Register.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay.
No.
Motion prevails. Members, we have a full agenda tomorrow. It would be appreciated if everyone is here on time. Meeting adjourned.